This is American Roots. I'm Nick Spitzer in New Orleans, where one of life's great joys is hitting the clubs and dance halls. Clubs can be a refuge, a home away from home for the bon vivants and night people who burn the candle late. New Orleans clubs go from high tone to low down. Some are both at once. Historian Bruce Raber.
If you're talking about New Orleans nightclubs, you're talking about the funk. And I think that's the defining element of New Orleans and why New Orleans bands have to be heard in their home environments in these clubs in New Orleans. If you hear them elsewhere, you're not going to get the message.
Guitarist and singer Ernie Vincent has memories from a homeland bandstand.
I remember one place we went, they had the chicken wire around the stage and stuff like that. And they had two or three long necks stuck in the chicken wire. And so the bartender said, "Well, come on through this way, guys, and set up, and I hope y'all can play good music."
Ernie Vincent coming up, plus music from Kermit Ruffins and Rebirth Brass, Dr. John and Ray Charles. Let's roll with a little rock from the clubs of New Orleans. Dixieland Rock on American Roots.
We're down in New Orleans at the Golden Goose. All the cats and the chicks are on the loose. I said, "Pretty baby, yeah, you said me too." I said, "Pretty baby, come on, let's do. Let's rock. Everybody, let's jump, let's throw. Everybody move, come on, pretty baby. Rock to the Dixieland Rock." Now along came Sally with the shakely hip. He got the drummer so nervous that he lost his sticks. Cornet player hit a note that's flat. Trombone hit him with a cool cat sack. I said, "Everybody rock." I said, "Everybody roll." I said, "Everybody jump." Rock to the Dixieland Rock. Pooped out of when the clock struck four, but she said, "No, daddy can't leave the floor." She wore a clinging dress, fit so tight, couldn't sit down, so we danced all night. I said, "Everybody rock." I said, "Everybody roll." I said, "Everybody rock. Rock to the Dixieland Rock." Yeah, everybody rock. I said, "Everybody roll." I said, "Everybody jump." I said, "Everybody throw." Rock to the Dixieland Rock.
Come on.
Come on, let me show you where it's at.
Come on.
Come on, let me show you where it's at.
Come on.
Come on, let me show you where it's at.
The name of the place is
I like it like that.
I like it like that. Now you take Sally and I'll take Sue, and we're gonna rock away all our blues. Come on.
Come on, let me show you where it's at.
Come on.
Come on, let me show you where it's
at.
Come on, let me show you where it's at.
The name of the place is
I like it like that.
Come on. Shoes. They had some cat shouting the blues. The people was yelling out for more, and all they were saying was, "Go, man, go, come on.
Come on, let me show you where it's at.
Come on,
come on, let me show you where it's
come
at.
On.
Come on, let me show you where it's at.
The name of the place,
I like it like that.
Come on.
Calling out the New Orleans clubs with Chris Kenner, especially a place called I Like It Like That. From 1961, Chris Kenner's first big hit with the renowned piano man and producer Alan Toussaint. Before that, Jerry Rains from Morgan City, Louisiana, with a swamp pop version of the song made famous by the King, Elvis, Dixieland Rock. New Orleans guitarist Edward Doc Souchon played with the 6 and 7/8 string band. He was a scholar of jazz, editing journals, writing articles, and his record collection is now found at the New Orleans Public Library. Here's one of his classics, The Animule's Ball on American Roots.
I sit down in Jungle Town, I mean many miles around. Order used to give a ball every night at the Animals Hall. When that band commenced to play, they'd all begin to shout. Oh, you'd laugh until your sides were split if you called those figures out. Oh, the monkey got scared and shouted, run, I say, while the wildcat, he put on the boom bichet. The panthers all commenced to move, while the elephant did that hoochie, macoochie, oh, the tiger did that eager rock, and they all commenced to dance way down in Jungle Town at that animal's ball. Oh, the lion, he come to that door, you could see that he was so. He said, let me in this hall, or I'll break up your doggone ball. Can't you see that I want to dance? Won't you give me half a chance? Well, he gave a roar that knocked down the door, and he broke up the animal's ball. Oh, the monkey got scared and shouted, right, I say. The wildcat, he put on the boom bichet. The panthers all commenced to move. Well, the elephant did that hoochie macoochie. Oh, the tiger did that eager rock, and they all commenced to dance way down in Jungle Town at that animal's ball. Way down in Jungle Town at that animal's ball.
This is American Roots from New Orleans. And if you like the music, tell all your friends. But if you don't like the music, don't tell nobody.
Grazing in the Grass with Rebirth Brass Band, 1991, a hit originally for Hugh Masekela, live at the Glass House, a beloved uptown club known for gigs by the Dirty Dozen and appearances from the Mardi Gras Indian tribes around carnival time each year. Before that, Lydia Marcel with her Atco hit, Everybody Dance. This is American Roots, touring the New Orleans music club scene in song and story. Jazz, heard outdoors and indoors, has been part of life in New Orleans for over a century. In the streets at second lines and parades, on steamboat excursions, at uptown debutante balls, as well as black dance halls downtown. Places with names like Cheapskates Hall or Funky Butt Hall, which doubled as a church on Sundays and a union hall the rest of the week. I asked Bruce Rayburn, director of the Hogan Jazz Archive at Tulane, about the beginnings of club life in New Orleans, starting with the legal red light district where Jelly Roll Morton got his start as a piano professor, Storyville.
Originally, before the district emerged in 1897, you had what was called Pig Ankle Corners, which is Iberville Street and Franklin intersection. And that, to some extent, might even be called the first germ of New Orleans club life. It was a place where we think jazz was being performed early in the 20th century. The clientele was racially mixed as well. And of course, this is borderline Treme, so it shouldn't be too surprising. The other area that was important, the 400 block of South Rampart Street near Rampart and Perdido, where you had the Eagle Saloon, Oddfellows Complex, Oddfellows Hall for rent up on the third floor. This is a place where Buddy Bolden would have played, for example. Little Gem Saloon, the Iroquois Theater, the Karnofsky Pawn Shop, where Armstrong, Louis Armstrong, has a connection.
Yeah, he got his first trumpet there.
Exactly.
From them,
working
from the Jewish
family. You know,
yeah.
Pushing rags. What made that area come to life was a kind of loosening of liquor laws, which really allowed entertainment and liquor to come together in New Orleans, because there were times, you know, the temperance era and whatnot was also burgeoning, amazingly enough, even in New Orleans in that period. And so loosening liquor laws and allowing entertainment, the convergence of those things, that really is the nexus of club life in New Orleans.
Bourbon Street fit in as a place where jazz is played and where clubs sort of grow out of the New Orleans community?
What we would now call Bourbon Street begins in 1934 with things like the Famous Store, for example, coming back after the end of Prohibition, where, again, this equation of liquor and musical entertainment, they hook up again.
Some call it a tenderloin Disneyland now.
Yeah, exactly, because it's stoked by the imagination of what you want, we got it, but also what are you willing to pay for.
The Famous Door is a place that I associate with the history of Louis Prima.
Leon Prima had a club on Bourbon Street as well, and that's where Louis Prima got discovered. And the magic year, 1934, once again, this is when Guy Lombardo hears him playing like no people. So the club wasn't doing so well, but he was giving it 110%. And Lombardo said, I'll book you up in 52nd Street in New York City at Leon and Eddie's. And so Prima's discovered by Guy Lombardo in 1934 on Bourbon Street.
I know why I've waited and know why I've been blue. Prayed each night for someone exactly like you. Why should we spend money on a show or two? No one does the love scenes exactly like you. Oh, you make me feel so grand. Would like to hand the world to you. You seem to understand each foolish little dream I'm dreaming, scheme I'm scheming. I know why my mother taught me to be true. She meant me for someone exactly like you.
What happens to Bourbon Street after the post-war years and into the 50s? I mean, we've seen it lionized in films like King Creole. What goes on into the 50s with that scene?
Bourbon Street became a focal point for New Orleans businessmen to cash in on the New Orleans jazz revival. Once they began to realize the potential for cultural tourism inherent in the idea that jazz was born in New Orleans, they tried to capitalize on it.
He rambled, he rambled, he rambled all around, in and out of the town, but didn't he ramble? He rambled, he rambled till the butchers cut him down.
And so on Bourbon Street, you have clubs like the Paddock, where Papa Celestan was playing, the Mardi Gras Lounge. The problem is that there was a certain fetish aspect to the way Celestan's band, they played on a stage behind the bar, for example, and hourly they would parade off that stage and do a second line through the crowd. In other words, it was to some extent a racist tableau, the way they were being exploited. This becomes a catalyst for people like Larry Borenstein and Alan Jaffe, for example, to try to create a more authentic club site on St. Peter Street with Preservation Hall. So basically, Preservation Hall is a reaction to the bad practices of Bourbon Street in the 1950s. What happens in the early 60s, however, is that jazz, that kind of commercialized jazz, in which if you don't get enough box office, you let the trombone player go, is being upstaged by Preservation Hall. And so in the early 1960s, what you see is a lot of these clubs being converted to burlesque houses.
What are some of the important aspects of New Orleans club life today, whether you're playing the drums and on the bandstand or in the crowd or you know, observing what's going on? What's your sense of some of the clubs out there today and their role in the city's kind of cultural reemergence?
If you're talking about New Orleans nightclubs, you're talking about the funk. Tipitina's, for example, is just a big old shell. It wasn't really very clean. The bathrooms weren't pleasant. But when you're packed in there with 1,000 people listening to anyone from the Meters to Professor Longhair, that is such a different experience than being in like the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco, politely seated at a table. It's the funk, man. It's exhilarating to be in that environment. And I think that's the defining element of New Orleans and why New Orleans bands have to be heard in their home environments in these clubs in New Orleans. If you hear them elsewhere, you're not going to get the message. You know, when I evacuated Katrina, I was curious about what I stood to lose. It's those memories that are important. It's nothing material in New Orleans. The material stuff decays here. But my only regret is that the work I do now as Director of Special Collections and as an academic cuts back on the amount of time I can spend in New Orleans clubs, but I've got some really happy memories to draw on.
Historian Bruce Rayburn of Tulane's Hogan Jazz Archive, talking about the arc of New Orleans jazz clubs. In a minute, we'll get right up to date with Kermit Ruffins at Vaughn's Place when American Roots returns.